thanks for everything you've done on that project.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Swisher City Council to order at 6 o'clock on Monday, the 13th of October, in the Swisher American Legion, post 671. And we've got special guests, the Johnson County Board of Supervisors, here tonight. We can go around and do introductions, but I know that our clerk is just dying to make sure that Swisher, at least, is accounted for. Here, take roll.
All right, thank you. My name is Terrence Nuschel. I serve as the chairperson of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors, and we'll call our meeting to order as well, as we are part of a joint meeting between Swisher and Johnson County.
Pat? Pat Harney, vice chair.
John Etheridge, regular member.
Janelle Reddig, I'm the past chair. We rotated, so Pat will be chair next year.
I'm Rod Sullivan.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you all for coming.
And thank you to the Legion for allowing us to do this here. Not a big turnout right now. I expect that the discussions we'll be having after this meeting will draw more people. So we appreciate that. And especially to the ladies of the auxiliary. I know we have our meetings on the same night that you have your meetings, and that never works out well as everyone would like, so we appreciate it. We have a point-by-point agenda in front of us. Is there anything that anyone wants to add to the agenda at this point? Any objection to the agenda as it's laid out? Seeing none, can I just assume that we'll move ahead with that then? And I don't know if you want to treat this more formally and go through it point by point, or take it more as an opportunity to just get to know one another, introduce ourselves.
Well, I think we'll probably just get right into the meat of things and just go through the agenda. And we have some point people on each of the conversation pieces along the way. Does that seem okay?
Yep. Sounds good.
Everyone all right?
But that doesn't mean you can't.
No, we want you
all. Yeah.
We're all family here, so we have something in common. All right, so what do we got? Local option sales tax.
Yeah, and I don't know how much time we want to spend on this. Honestly, you'd probably be preaching to the choir.
Where are you putting your dollars towards?
General city improvements and streets.
Okay. And who's our point person?
That would be me.
All right.
So the county is, I guess I shouldn't say streets, but secondary roads is where we're putting 90% of the funding into roads and infrastructure and potentially another bridge. And then the other 10% is going to go for courthouse improvements of the old, it's for the old courthouse mainly. A lot of updating that needs to be done, work that it's going to be that's going to need to be done. I think we had almost $100,000 of expenditures last year that were not really planned for. So that was just one of those things where we know things are going to happen, and if we can actually address them before they happen, it'd be for the best. So that's where the county is putting its money, if passed.
Yeah. Have you heard anything from other cities? Do you have a sense of how well things are going, how well the word is getting out?
I guess I can't, speaking for myself, I haven't heard much from the cities on with regards to swaying people's opinion. It's one of those things where people who are for it are for it, people who are against it are against it. There's, mean, I have yet to see any signs that say vote no on the sales tax. So I think that's, you know, maybe a better opportunity with that.
One issue that you'll run into a little bit is, you know, there's always a fairly significant, when you've got a long ballot,
yes.
A lot of people don't flip it over. There's going to be a lot of people that vote senator and governor and turn in their ballot. Mm-hmm. So,
because
it's on the back side, right? And so, you know, it'll be, I'm sure, a significant drop-off, but hopefully not too significant.
Exactly.
Iowa City formed a political action committee and hired a staff member, right, or a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed in last week's Lone Tree newspaper, their mayor had a letter to the editor, or it's more of a mayor's report, and it's not a letter, but he told people, I would urge you to vote yes, and he told them what they were going to use it for. But if you haven't already voted, it is a very long ballot, and I think people will get some ballot fatigue because, you know, this is on the back after all the judges, so.
I was almost late to a meeting because I decided to vote before the meeting, and I'm just like, I need to kind of move along because it is a long ballot.
Now, you here in Swisher don't get a lot of early voters because there's none of the satellites are here, and it's just not the same culture of voting early. But I'd have to look up, are we at over 20,000 ballots out already?
I don't know.
It's approaching 20,000 ballots already out. Now, they're not all back. But the auditor's been running satellite locations at football games, and the big satellite locations start this week. I mean, the kind of the ones people are used to, the hospital and the libraries and stuff, Hy-Vees. So a lot of people have already voted, but we actually could look up how many have voted here. It won't be very many.
So when you said football games, she means high school games.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, you still have time if you wanted to do something that, you know, told people to flip the ballot over and make sure you read it, you know, something like that. Because flipping the ballot over will be a big key to everyone.
We do have an item on our meeting agenda for our regular meeting after this. The council's agreed very magnanimously to pass a joint resolution on in support of it. And we can take that opportunity to remind people that on election day it's going to be long. So,
and legally, that's all you can do as a council.
Right.
But as individuals, obviously, you can do other. But, you know, passing a resolution and sending a letter to the editor to the papers that you've done that is pretty large.
Are there any other questions that you have or anything you want to comment on that? Okay. Our item number two, city and county projects, including Division Street and 20th Street, same thing, and other streets and trails. I assume you all came in on Division Street. You know, that's on there. At some point in the future, maybe we'll be considering a larger scale upgrade project for that. And it would be nice if we could coordinate that. You know, we've got sort of an odd situation where there's Shoeyville, then some county road, then Swisher, then more county road, and when one entity does something, it affects everybody else. When Shoeyville upgraded their road, it increased our traffic counts, and so it'd be nice if we could coordinate that somehow. And again, that's far off into the distant future.
So you don't have that scheduled at all?
No. But I know that, I think, Mike, you and I and Janelle had a conversation way back in January here at Cava House, and streets, of course, was the major thrust of that. And I think you mentioned that this corner of Johnson County is not really on the board's radar for the next 5 years in terms of.
We assign this topic to someone.
Okay.
Oh, me?
I'm happy to answer the question.
In that case, I'm going to take issue with you, Mr. Mayor. No. We actually are, one thing that we are really excited about is, for the first time, I think maybe in as long as like 35 years, we are adding a chip seal road to the county's system, and that's right out here, Greencastle. And
that is nice. That,
good. Have you heard good things from
folks?
Yeah,
I have heard.
We just needed it to be hotter when we got it down because of the delays. So it's going to take till next year to
really
saw it up.
Yeah. We've actually got our county engineer, Greg Parker, who's in the audience here, if you've got specific questions about how that'll work. But that's really been something we started talking about. I've been on the board 10 years, and when I came on, we were first talking about it. It took a long time to get some planning done, and then some money saved, and then the floods hit, and all of our money disappeared. And it's just been since then that we've been able to get back to where we could actually plan and fund this. But we're actually pretty proud of it, because like I said, it's been at least 35 years since we've actually upgraded a road like that. So we're happy it's here and it's in this area. Now that said, we've had the investment in I guess you call it Division 120th when it goes through Shoeyville recently, and so we don't have any other things I think scheduled in this area in quite a while. We've had some recent investments, so
yeah, and I would say it's definitely on the radar screen. The Board of Supervisors did have a tour with secondary roads just this past month. We did review and analyze a number of the roads in this area. 120th was a road of concern for our secondary roads department. We do have some aggressive road scheduling going on here over the next several years, primarily for this particular area, 965. From here to North Liberty, we'll see another improvement, which will be the bridge area and kind of the area that's just not done yet as North Liberty works on their end. But we're seeing some concerns about the condition of 120th Street, and so that is definitely on the radar screen. Amana Road also is one that we continue to do battle with between the flooding and the impacts that has. That's a very expensive project. We look at trying to upgrade and then trying to come up with some kind of middle ground, and then trying to do that where if we make an investment, the flood takes it out. Do we really want to go there? So that's still of conversation. But all of these things lead to the funding side of things too, and I know we'll get into that in a little bit.
Now, who do you folks work with for an engineer?
H.R. Green.
Okay. Because we should probably have Greg be in touch with them on 120th and open that conversation, so that if anybody does start to do anything, we can combine forces. And
and 120th is on our radar from border to border, border to Ely Road. The entire thing that is 10, how many miles, Greg? You know?
It's about 10 miles.
10 miles. So let's just say we don't have $10 million to do this. So this will have to be done in phases for us. And to time our phase with your improvements in town makes a lot of sense, because we can get a better bid by economy of scale. We just did that with North Liberty on Mahaffey Bridge Road. And we actually handled the bidding on it with their parameters of what they needed on their part. And so, you know, that makes a lot of sense that we kind of try to match that up if at all possible, because I think normally we would both get a better price because the project will be larger. And a lot of your costs of these projects are actually deploying, it's a different word, staging, mobilizing that. And so if you're going to do a larger chunk, you don't pay the mobilizing twice. So.
Well, and again, this is very, very early. I mean, we have not had any formal action taken on it. It's just something that comes up every once in a while. We've had a couple of issues in specific places that we've had to do some repairs. So I think it's on our radar, at least, that sooner or later we're going to have to.
I think because of the heavy truck traffic that's been going through here, that's why a lot more people are starting to raise the issues, and it's not just here in Swisher, it's the people along the county out here too have been complaining about it and how bad the roads are.
Well, I mean, we've had a series of winters and springs that have made our roads deteriorate a lot quicker than we all thought they would. And so things we thought could be put off farther down the road, we're like, oops, now what are we going to do? So a lot of things crumbled faster than we thought. And I think that's why you see the county, if you pay attention to our lobbying efforts, I mean, we spent a lot of time talking to our legislators, both state and federal, about their road use tax funds and the fact that they haven't kept up with inflation. And we can't just continue to raise property taxes to pay for everything. I mean, they need to be a partner in this.
But funding always is the part of that, getting back to that first topic where, you know, because Johnson County, in regards to the funding formula, if everyone does pass a sales tax, 90% of our dollars goes towards road infrastructure and bridge infrastructure. And so we can be even a little more aggressive if we have those kinds of dollars available.
Well, and you mentioned the road use tax, and considering the amount of traffic that is truck traffic from the Amanas, and, you know, it's not local folks that are paying a tax. It's... So.
Well, you have a very important Senate race going for your, and I was telling Chris earlier that the debate for that Senate race is next Tuesday, 7 to 9. I think we go first, right? So that one is either 7:30 or.
It starts at 7:30.
In the Coralville Public Library, and you should show up and ask about the road use tax fund. I mean, they should be asked this question. Because if that's important to you, residents of Swisher should get to that forum and try to get them on record. Because a lot of times they only hear from us and not the cities, in particular the more rural legislators. And it's important that they hear from cities too.
That's a good point. Is there anything else you want to discuss? Moving right along then, the county roads shed and agreements for road maintenance.
Yes, I can kind of start things out with that. The Board of Supervisors, as you know, a few years ago have identified that our maintenance shed here in the community of Swisher, along with the maintenance shed in Solon, we had looked to create a combined maintenance shed, and we have done so. Just outside of Shoeyville, which means now we're in the process to really start the ball rolling here when it comes to where and what use we want for those other two abandoned buildings. Now, they're not quite abandoned yet. In fact, we're planning to, as we go through the process of appraisals and such, we're looking at likely utilizing the Swisher shed one more winter. While that process is going on and as we're creating that planning. But the Board of Supervisors has given direction to secondary road staff to first work with the Swisher Library. If the Swisher Library isn't interested, then we would work with the City of Swisher. And if you folks aren't interested, then we would look at a third party. We had a very good success when it comes to a transition, particularly with the City of Tiffin. I encourage you to communicate with them on how that process worked, but in a nutshell, their attorneys worked with our attorneys, and it was just a fair market value from the appraisal, and everyone seemed to be pretty happy about that process. But you know, we want to be cordial to what your needs are and what you folks want when it comes to the shed. I'm not sure at some point do you have a subcommittee or anyone that. Or a member of the council that's going to be assigned to that to work with our secondary roads and probably Greg's liaisons, Greg Parker's liaisons.
I'm not sure we've ever laid out a schedule or a timeline of what we'd be interested in doing. You know, from my own personal perspective, I would like to know what we're going to do with it before we
sure.
spend the time on figuring out exactly how to make it happen. But we did have Greg come in and talked to us a couple of months ago.
Terrence, you said one more winter, so do you envision that like summer of 2015 that you'd be out of there?
I would envision that once we're going to just go through the appraisal process here now. So as soon as that all gets all done, then it's just a matter of putting an agreement together and moving forward, just like I said, what we did with Tiffin. But there is a desire to go ahead and utilize, as we are working to transition not just into our new facilities here on 120th on the other side of Shueyville, but also as we get up and running into our new facility that burned down at Secondary Roads on IWV Road. As that gets transitioned, I think that you know, our staff has asked that if it's possible to go ahead and just utilize it one more winter, and I don't think it's going to matter anyway with the weather here and by the time it goes through the legal process. So that's currently the plan in place. Obviously, if things need to be changed, they can.
Yeah, everything's been done in terms of tanks and stuff. I mean, moving out is literally just a matter of driving a few pieces of equipment out and then we're done. So it'd be very quick to get out.
In reality, generally, when you do an appraisal, it's usually locked in for about 90 days. So we probably won't do that until spring. We may have it arranged to do so, but at that time we'll get the appraisal. And I think the last meeting Greg and I had with you folks, you mentioned that you didn't think the library was still interested, but we'll have to have something that says that, I guess, when we go through that process.
Well, we have a fairly large chunk of the library's leadership in the audience right now.
And I think we're happy where we are. That building was, prior to Swisher Telephone moving out of the building, that building was probably our best option. Once we got established where we are, we really like being next to City Hall. We like being right downtown. It's a better location for us. It's not as large as we'd like, but it's a better location.
So a second library. I mean, and of course, you know, just the process in general. This, I mean, as you know, this is the people's building, so it has to go through a pretty strict process in regards to in response to the county actually giving up a piece of the people's property. So it has to go through that meeting notice that your clerk, I'm sure, has to put up with quite a bit. Those kind of things.
I do think you folks should also think about zoning and what you actually want to have there, because if we end up, you know, we don't want to end up selling it to somebody and then they can't get the zoning that they need from you folks. So if you want to play middleman on that, that's fine. If you don't, we just need to communicate.
Well, and there's a little bit of a case of, you know, the tail wagging the dog there, that we're still working on a comprehensive plan that sort of establishes what our zoning rules very generally will be, and I don't think we even brought it up to our zoning folks that they might need to get on this. But we should do that, just so they're aware that if we don't end up buying it, someone else will.
The board had agreed to give the library right of first refusal, so I think someone said it'd be nice then if we had a letter that said they're not interested. And then, you know, but for the fire, we'd already be out of there and it'd be in someone else's hands. So, I mean, we expect to move into our new building sometime this
Christmas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about early spring. I hope to have this off the county's.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, once we go through the disposal process, we want to work with you folks. Obviously, if the library doesn't want it, then...
And if you don't want it, we kind of need to know sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's just it. We identified that when we were going to spend the money on a new facility to combine Solon and the Swisher maintenance facilities, there was a desire to take that money and put it towards... And then adding the additional dollars from the loss of the fire, I mean, all of these things kind of start to add up. So that was the direction we gave staff. When it comes to road maintenance, as we are going on our tour, it's important that we make sure that we have good communication between our secondary road staff and your maintenance folks. And we've had a great, great relationship with that. There is a particular corner that I think you're all aware of that we're getting complaints of, and some other folks are, and I think that actually that portion or that side actually falls under you folks as far as a decision in regards to just making sure that residents can see around some tall prairie type grass, and just making sure if you need anything from us, let us know, or our staffs are ready to work together with that. But I think you know that area off of 120th.
Well, I think that I was going to bring that corner up because that is sort of an ongoing issue. And the problem we run into is that even if we have our public works guys take care of the public right away there, that corner lot is outside of the city limits, that particular individual. So we have limited authority in telling him he has to keep his inner yard mowed and any shrubbery there. You know, we can't go in there and mow it for him because he's not.
Well, I think you can, actually. And that's because as long as we have documentation that we've given you that authority. And so I'll make sure our staff communicates with you with that, and then make sure that you folks have that reviewed to cover your bases, and we'll do the same. We'll work on it together like that.
Because I don't think that's included anywhere in the agreements we have already where...
Well, if it's in the right-of-way, you do. Sure.
We can... Yeah. Well, if it's in the right-of-way, we can... We are supposed to take care of it.
Right.
If it's private land abutting the right-of-way that's outside the city limits, we would want something very clear from the county.
That wouldn't be a problem. If our engineer, Greg's here, he can speak for it, but if he deemed that area that was affecting the right-of-way, that was a safety concern, we have that authority. Sure, we can work with you on that.
Okay.
And we've had those situations. They're rare. They're rare, but we have had times where we try to work with residents. If the residents don't want to work, we hire someone to go do that, and they'll get charged and assessed.
Well, and there was work that was done. I mean, you went out there and trimmed what we could trim, and then I think the resident did some work also. I don't know if it was satisfactory or not. But
it was better than what it was originally, but it's still not perfect.
Right.
Yeah, because I received an email for the one from
them. You got another? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just looking.
All right, let us know how we can help with that, okay? That's all I had on my list. Anyone else? That one?
Item number 4, small community infrastructure, including sewer plants. I wanted to make sure this was on there just to share our experience and to see what we've heard from other smaller towns. You know, we've recently run into a situation. 5 years ago, we had to build a new sewer plant because the state told us we had to. And some of those regulations in terms of what you have to build, the size of it, might have been designed for larger cities and don't take into account some of the budgetary concerns that the smaller towns do have. So I wanted to get your impressions on what you've heard from other cities. Has that been a problem in terms of having to adhere to state mandates that are handed down that might not be very well thought out for a city less than 1,000 people? And I don't know who your point person is on this.
Actually, we had written Swisher.
I served, it's the other part of DNR, but I served 6 years on the Natural Resources Commission. The part that you're talking about is the Environmental Protection Commission. But that's why there's a lot of revolving loan funds and grant funds and whatnot. But I think that that there is a crossroads in Iowa between clean water and not. And a lot about the direction of clean water will be determined on November 4th. But what is clearly happening, in particularly the cities in the corridor, but not just the corridor, and I'll use Hills as an example, is the old ways are not working. And people, they want city water and sewer, particularly if they've lived somewhere else. And their demands on that system, we're undersizing everything. So you looked at North Liberty's system was supposed to last 15 years, and it lasted under 5. I read in the North Liberty Leader about this dispute going on in Tiffin, When we did one of these meetings in Tiffin, we're going down a list like this, and about halfway through, we realized that they don't have enough water for like one more development to go in. And Rod said, I don't know why we're talking about anything else here. You need to be talking about the water, you know. But Tiffin has a developer that wants to go out by the new school, but it's skipping a lot of land. So the cost to run public services out there is like $300,000 when the guy's only going to build six houses. And they're like, but you have to obey our rules. And he's like, but it's going to cost too much money. Well, then you shouldn't be building these. And until there's a larger development that the cost can be spread. And that similar argument is happening in Solon right now with the developer, because Solon allowed them to build phase one or two, I may have that wrong, without having their lift station and trunk in place. Now the guy wants to build the rest, but they're like, you know, we can't do this. And so, I mean, my advice to you is, Hills. They had voted down public water. And then last general election, or last city council election, they finally had all these grants and all these revolving loan funds. Mathematically, this was basically a no-brainer. And they had people who just, no one could live in their community, no new homes, because they couldn't get good water. And they passed that, so they'll have water. And they passed it overwhelmingly this time around. But it's because the finances were in place. It, you know, it wasn't just, your all bill's going to go up 200%. No, they had the financing in place first. And so that, if you're headed that direction, I definitely would work on with ECICOG how you prepare for these grant applications and revolving loan funds and stuff so that you can lower the cost to the current taxpayers and spread it out over a long, you know, if you have a low interest loan or no interest loan, you can spread that payment out so that 10 years from now the people are still helping. But I think every city in Johnson County that's growing is having similar problems. And that's a little bit different than your regulation, but the DNR has recently started adapting some regulations, and it's more of the National Environmental Protection, to smaller systems, particularly on wastewater, that you can do it different ways. But I don't think it's far enough along to recognize that sometimes wetlands are a good treatment process for small amounts of wastewater. So, I mean, it's just not as creative and visionary as it should be yet. That's a long, convoluted answer to your question.
I'll take it. Sounds good.
If we can be of assistance in terms of supporting you for grants or whatever, I'm sure we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, I appreciate that. I have talked with ECOG very generally about what their funding, what their process is for identifying funding and grants and things. So.
Also, the county employs a stormwater management person, Kate Giannini.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes stormwater and septic or sewer management is problematic because there's ground surface water getting into it, and it can put a strain on your system. I don't know if that's what's going on. But, you know, Kate is available to assist you or give you advice or talk to you about how to slow down your stormwater and redirect it in detention ponds. And, you know, use Kate anytime that you need to kind of get some advice on stormwater management.
We've been working with her very tangentially on there's a culvert issue. A homeowner there was talking with her and then got in touch with the city. And so I think we're in the early stages of the dialogue there. But this is something that you and I can talk about, Craig, but in terms of groundwater infiltration.
And we don't have a lot of I&I, luckily. We're fixing a spot that's supposed to start today, but with the rain it's not. But there's a pipe running under a creek over here that we scoped it, and there's a lot of I&I through there. There's a crack in the pipe. So we'll be fixing that soon, but other than that, we're really fortunate here. So we're in pretty good shape.
can you tell us a little bit about your roads projects yet? I see a big one going on.
That's actually not a roads project. That's mitigating what used to be an underground storage tank.
Oh, okay.
They tore out our... Well, they didn't end up tearing out the playground. They pulled out some trees and dug out I don't know how much earth and have filled the
16 feet.
16 feet? Hopefully for the last time. It's been an ongoing, you know, it never was mitigated as much as we wanted, but that's all passed through from the state's underground storage tank fund. So, but then, I don't think we have any other outstanding roads projects, anything substantial. We had a proposal from our engineer to do another culvert replacement that nobody wants to think about right now until next spring. So. Anything else on this? Okay. Item number 5, county city contracts and arrangements for services, including the library, law enforcement, and building inspections. And I know there are folks in the audience that would like to chime in on this also, who can speak much more eloquently than I can.
Absolutely not. Library, as you know, county funds the library, city funds the library. We have a contract for services with Shoeyville. We're fairly new built library, 5 years old now, coming up on 6 years, which is astonishing. And we are seeing a continued and increasing push for more services, more building, more. Right now, I would say one of the biggest ones is more hours. If we are in the building at all, people will even. I told Chris, if I ride my bike to the building and on a Sunday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning, someone will knock on the door and want in. So we are seeing an increased, and it's just constant. As you're probably all aware, we're an all-volunteer staff. That can't continue. We're now at 8 years of volunteer staff, and we have to do something more. We're getting pressure from the state on that. I was just telling Janelle, the state of Iowa has created a task force to look at the way they're funding libraries, and I have been asked to be on that along with Allison.
Ames Galston.
For some reason, her name just has the Boston number today. From Coralville, she and I are on that task force, and that's a 2-year task force. So the state is looking at how they are funding public libraries. The county is currently funding public libraries in the county 4 different ways, and I think we may want to figure out what's the best way for you guys to be working with us and to be working with the city. The city has continually increased their funding over 5 years. And like I said, we are seeing more and more demand for services. Call for programming, call for more meeting space, call for just more of everything. Everything, anytime you put anything out, the call then becomes, now what are you going to do next? So we are growing rapidly, and it's something that is really good for the citizens of Swisher. And our argument from the beginning has been, we want to be as professional and as top flight a library as any library in the state of Iowa, because it's what the citizens of Swisher deserve. So,
and that's not to say that you want to be the same library as Coralville.
No,
that's,
we want to be the appropriate library for the city of Swisher, but it needs to be a top flight library, and we are working hard to do that. But we are beginning to see that we need growth. There are places we need to grow that we are just not being able to grow at this point in time.
Yeah, we've funded it, you're right, in various ways, and right. whether a library is accredited or not. And a lot of that is based also on, in some of the areas, about the rural use. And
right.
I think we base, particularly this one, on your rural usage as we do some of the others.
Actually, and we go through the block grant program.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yours does. That's right.
We go through the block. Yeah. We in Oxford go through the block grant. Solon is based on rural usage. And North Liberty, Coralville, and Iowa City are on the contract. And I believe Tiffin is just... out there somewhere.
Tiffin and Lone Tree are the same.
Yeah.
You and Oxford are the same, and all the rest are the same.
Solon is not.
No, Solon's got a contract.
Same contract.
They're on the contract.
Yeah, so it's just two.
And the reason was you weren't accredited.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's kind of a catch-22 situation. To become accredited, we have to have paid staff. We have to move up those tier levels. Once we move up those tier levels, we get more money from the state. We get more money from you. But it's kind of that catch-22. How do we get there? And as a brand new library, we're finding that a difficult push to make.
Are you tracking rural usage?
Yes, we track our rural usage. We track our open access usage, so we know, just like any other library in the state, we track that. I can tell you, I just did an annual survey, about 35% of our usage is county. About 35% of our patrons are county patrons. That number skews a little bit because our county patrons are more likely to be family patrons, meaning that one member of the family has a card and everybody checks out. Usually the parent has and everybody on the checks out under the same card. Whereas our city of Swisher families are more likely to, junior high kids have their own cards, younger kids, because they come into the building by themselves, whereas county kids are less likely to come into the building by themselves. So it's that skews it a little bit. So I would say our county residents, our county circulation is probably closer to 45%.
And out of county?
Out of county, we're not, our open access, and not a huge number. I think I have, out of our 600 patrons, 25 who are out of county. Most of those are our Kirkwood students who actually work for us, who register.
But people on the other side of the border aren't allowed to check out books?
They can check out books. They come to us as open access patrons. We just don't see a lot of them.
Okay.
I just, again, want to point out that the funding source is the rural tax base.
Right.
So this is actually a portion of your county dollars that doesn't come from residents of Iowa City or residents from Swisher.
Right.
It comes from those in the unincorporated area.
And so you're paying for those rural residents who use our services. And it's just, even from our rural residents, we're seeing more and more push for more and more services. So.
Which is why it's important to open up as much access to state-level funding.
Right.
By increasing your tier. And,
right.
You know, would it be safe to say that it's to the point where someone's going to have to take the first step and just say, we believe in you and
pretty
are going
much,
to adjust our funding?
Much. I don't know if you guys are, how familiar you guys are with the library tier system. There are three tiers. There's tier zero, but... Tier zero, we're past that. We're tier one. There's tier one, tier two, tier three. And once you're tier three, you can then become accredited. And there are a set of standards that you have to meet each of those standards. The library board, this is my library board right here. We're missing one number tonight. We just went through our annual planning. And in looking at that, we meet all the standards for tier three except for those that are directly connected to paid staff. And so for us, that is a very, we're ready to make that next big leap. We just have to find the way to do that.
Laura, you have a sense of, you said there's extra money that would be available. What's the, after that extra money is accounted in, what's the gap?
I'm not certain. I would have to really crunch those numbers harder than I had a chance to do.
What's your current budget?
Our current budget is $20,000 a year.
How do you define a paid staff person?
A paid staff person for accreditation has to be 20 hours a week.
And does it have to be a set minimum amount? I mean,
it has to be, it's basically a professional wage.
Okay.
It can't be minimum wage, they say.
So it's
because you're hiring a professional person.
Like a librarian or?
Right, yeah. A certified, they don't have to hold an MLS, but they have to be certified by the state.
And you receive $7,500 from the county?
$7,000. And then we have money that comes to us from Shoeyville, and then the city of Swisher, and then we have donations, fines, book sale, what we can scrape up out of seat cushions after.
That's where it all went.
Yeah, these kids are really good at cash. So, yeah. just something that's coming up, and it's something we know is going to have to happen, and we wanted to put it out there on the table that it's going to have to be, like everything else, it's going to have to be a partnership on this one. So.
So you track card holders, but not circulation?
We track card holders. We also track circulation.
So 35% are county. Are those card holders or circulation?
35% of our card holders, and they are, and it actually tracks pretty close. It's about this, I guess a little more than that. I don't have the number right with me tonight, Janelle, but they track pretty close. I know that the city of Swisher is right at 55% patrons and 55% circulation for city of Swisher, so they're just over half.
Do you have to be, to make that next tier, do you have to be like a paid person for a whole year before you qualify for that tier?
Actually,
you know,
once staff is paid, we then apply to the state and say, look, we meet these qualifications, and then they can pump us up the tier.
So you don't have to do it for a whole year?
No.
Okay.
Good question.
Well, then I didn't know.
Exactly, yeah. No, the accreditation cycle actually works on a 3-year cycle, but if you know you're going to move up, you can apply at any time.
Okay.
So. It is kind of neat. I mean, we remember you folks coming to us when it was just a dream, and it's neat to see how heavily used it is now.
Right, yeah.
So if you make the next tier, what's the real benefit? I mean, is there a huge...
As I said, the state is looking at how they're funding libraries, and right now the way they do it is we currently get in direct state aid, in direct funding from the state of Iowa, we get $392 a year.
Oh, wow.
Just by moving up to tier 3, if we did nothing else, that would increase to about $5,000.
So that's
it's a chunk. Now, like I say, the state is going through a 2-year process to look at how they are allocating money directly.
So that's what you're saying on this board that you're doing. Okay.
I don't think things are going to change a whole lot.
So it's going to be a lot.
Okay. It's a benefit to us to move up, and they structured it that way to get people to move up because they want the state, like us, thinks every citizen in the state of Iowa deserves top-notch library service.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there any other questions for Laura from anyone?
I guess one of the things that kind of comes to mind is when you say that, all right, they give you $300-some now, but then they give you, what, do you say $5,000 if you're the next tier, but then you're paying an employee to get that.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really...
Yeah. So you have to kind of adjust, figure it out. And it's, like I said, I'm not absolutely certain how to crunch those numbers yet. But I think we need to be talking about it.
And it really is hard to overstate how community support of the library is, not just in terms of volunteer hours, but in terms of the value that the community places on having a library.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all do. That's the basis for our youth. And it's like,
exactly.
I need to...
Exactly.
Well, as I left the building, there were 4 girls lying on the floor in the front room with their feet up in the air. We just didn't want to go home tonight. And I was like, okay, guys.
So you just locked the building behind them?
Yeah. It was 5:30. I told them, okay, you can stay until your mom calls you for dinner. Then you're out.
I think the other components we talked about here is the law enforcement. I assume we haven't heard any complaints about the service you're getting. I know we've edged the costs up trying to meet what our actual costs are. And I think the other one is the inspections. And I know I've talked with our housing inspection group, and they're satisfied. And they said you folks are having some growth. And you're anticipating quite a bit of growth here in the near future with some building going on in your community.
Hope so.
So I guess, is everything working fine or working all right?
I think so. I mean, Tanya and I have been working on the process and trying to figure out, I mean, I just need to learn myself what the process is for getting building permits in and getting inspections and getting the county the information that they need. But I think we're doing pretty well.
Our building inspectors feel it's going well, too, so we just want to be sure everything was on the right track.
Okay. Then we'll move on to item number 6, engineering agreements and plans for growth.
This is really just talking about, you know, we have a fringe area agreement with Swisher, but it hasn't been revisited in quite a while. And most of you probably actually know our planning and zoning director, Rick Dvorak. He lives up in this neck of the woods, as does our county engineer. So it's easy if you guys need to holler, they're right down the road. But I know Rick just wanted to talk about the idea of whether or not you folks wanted to revisit that. A lot of it has to do, like you said, you're working on a comp plan, and you'll probably have slightly different directions that you're talking about growing and that sort of thing. And once that happens, we probably just want to sit down.
What's your timing on the comprehensive plan?
Our P&Z is looking at it right now, and they are up to page 34, 33, and 42. So they're about two-thirds of the, three-quarters of the way through it. And hopefully we'll have something for the council to look at fairly shortly, and then we'll be able to move ahead on that. But we did get a letter from the county about the fringe area agreement and asking us to please think about whether we want to revisit it all. And I think we're going to put that on the agenda for our November meeting.
It makes sense to do it after you finish your comprehensive plan, because
right. Well, I just want
that'll to probably have new maps in it.
Right, but it never hurts just to be familiar with what the current current agreement is. And just a chance to look at that.
Let Rick know, and I'm sure if he can make it to your November meeting, he'd be happy to do that.
Sounds good. Does anyone have any questions about the fringe area?
Do you know what the date was on that last one that we worked on?
Are you talking about the 28D?
We call it fringe area, but yeah.
Is that what it is?
My guess is, you know, we redid our land use plan, and I think we might have done something at that time. That's like 2008. Does that sound about right?
It's no more recent than that.
Yeah.
That one's been a while. And remember, we do this primarily as, if you didn't know, it's actually more city protection than county.
Yeah.
You folks, being in city government, actually have authority within a couple of miles of your own communities anyway. But this is just a better opportunity for us to kind of work together and say, you know, if there's going to be growth and development actually out in the country, we want you to be aware, what kind of growth do you want? Do you want it to city standards? Do you want it to county standards? I mean, that's the gist of it. But as you create your own future comprehensive land use or growth areas, it'd be nice to update it then for sure.
I'm trying to think if you've waived review over one that I thought you shouldn't have reviewed, but other cities have. Because
I think we've waived review over everything that's come across the desk.
There have been other cities that
fire chief might have a different opinion.
They've waived review, and I'm like, they really should have reviewed this, because you know this is clearly going to be in city limits in X amount of years. The lot's clearly too big. I mean,
Solon's done that.
Shuiville waived on something that I didn't think they should waive. I mean, because they should weigh in. If that's going to end up in your city,
yeah.
I think you should say something. If this doesn't meet, you know, there's not a sidewalk, and we would want a sidewalk. I mean, you should at least have a conversation about it. And I know our timing doesn't always coincide with your meeting schedule, but, you know, you need just express yourself on that if we're having difficulty. You know, because I think if we heard Swisher needed more time to review this, I think we would probably try to work that out.
I'm not sure we've had anything happen close enough to the current city limits that there was a concern that there's a threat that we might have to annex them at some point, you know.
Yeah, we've worked with you, I know, quite a bit off of the 965 area with the winery and those kind of things. And yeah, everyone seems to kind of work it out, but as you folks create that vision, particularly on 965, which really would be your economic engine, quite frankly, I mean, you folks know that, as you go towards North Liberty, that's where we'll have some work with you. As you go north, you'll actually have to work with the city of Cedar Rapids, because they took advantage of some legislation and swiped a road from Johnson County. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's unfortunate for those residents that have to go to a city council meeting in Cedar Rapids to have a voice, but that's what the legislature did.
And no representation.
Right. City Council, Cedar Rapids.
Yeah, that's what they're
doing. I'm sure they're going to work hard for the residents of rural and incorporated Johnson County.
Right. That's what I've heard also.
You think Paul paid for that, by the way.
Do we have any concrete plans of growth that we'd like to share, or not so much? All right. If there's nothing else on that, then we'll move on to item 7, use of TIF.
Yeah, I'm the person who was assigned to talk about this, and I blew a golden opportunity because I just had the new numbers in my hand today, and I forgot to look up Swisher specifically, and I could have done that. But it's on the county website, so if you're ever curious just how many dollars are involved in TIF, it's a very easy thing to find. Go to the auditor's website, and there's a link, and you can go right to it. The primary thing that we want to talk about with it is just in general, you know, the use of TIF has been very difficult in Johnson County over the years. Going back to, I think, 1998, we're over $50 million that's been diverted from the county itself. You know, more than that has been diverted from the schools. Of course, the schools have an opportunity to get some of that back from the state. The county does not. So over the years, just since 98, $50 million has not come into the Johnson County coffers. And you start thinking about the fact that now we're asking for a $30 million courthouse expansion. We could have just paid for that, you know. So it's a very frustrating thing if you're in our shoes and you see all the needs and you have things you want to pay for and you don't have that income coming in. I guess when we come to the smaller towns, we just want to remind everybody that I understand that it's an important tool and it can be a very attractive tool, but we just want to always ask everybody to think about it, use it wisely. Some communities have chosen to do projects and then kind of just skip to the next project and skip to the next project, and that really causes us a problem because we never get to revalue that base and gain the increments. So, I think more than anything, we just want to ask you folks to please be judicious in your use and think about us as you make those decisions, and we would certainly appreciate that.
That makes a lot of sense. I can appreciate what you're saying. From the city standpoint, I'm reminded of what Mayor Kemp said at the joint entities meeting in Tiffin a couple of months ago, that, you know, for a city the size of Swisher, if we can get an extra, you know, $40,000 in our city budget, that makes a big difference, more than it would in Iowa City, more than it would in the counties. You know, we could never even conceive of a $30 million project that is just one thing that's going on at the county level. I certainly would not encourage us to be reckless with TIF, but we do want to preserve that as an option, as something that we can use, because every little bit helps when you are a smaller community. Anyone else have anything to share on that?
I was trying to look up the chart and having trouble. It was going to take too long. Andy can email it to you. Andy Johnson, our executive assistant. Wave, Andy. So he is our go-to of any when you need to figure out what in the world the board is doing.
That must be an interesting job.
No, like herding cats.
Herding cats, that's his job. Yeah.
Very nice. Right, community ID program. And I know we had an offer to have someone come and speak to us earlier this year, which we did not take them up on. I feel a little badly about that.
I'll do it. And then you're off the hook, I think.
Great.
Unless you're like, now I want to know a lot more. community ID came at, there are several large metropolitan areas that have a community ID. An organization called the Center for Worker Justice, working with low-income members of the workforce, sometimes immigrant, a lot of immigrant members, came up with this idea. They went to the city of Iowa City, the Human Rights Commission okayed it, their council was interested, and then it quickly became clear that it really wouldn't have as much meaning if it was only a one community ID, that so many people live in one community, work in another, get services in one county, a community, but live in another. So they approached the Board of Supervisors to explore this as the issuer of a countywide community ID. Immediately, once it started getting news, the Chamber of Commerce came on board, law enforcement's come on board. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that people don't have IDs and have difficulty getting the state government issued ID. Not the least of which is there's still a significant amount of people who don't have birth certificates, both residents of our own country and other countries. And I think those of us who are carrying it around think that that's not a big deal, but it is for people, particularly people who are living in poverty. So a lot of immigrants, elderly, disabled folks don't have IDs. And even today, if you have money and you have your own credit card, you're often asked for an ID to use your own credit card. So what's happening is people are spending their money on the internet as opposed to buying local, which is why the Chamber of Commerce is behind this. So the auditor, the county recorder, led by the county attorney, Janet Linus, have been working on this in detail. Right now, where it is the cities that have libraries in the urban area actually met a few weeks ago. And some of the city managers came, one of the mayors came, to ask the cities, if there was a community ID, what would you want it to be able to do in your city? So would it serve as a library card, or could you attach a barcode on it that it would be a library card? Could it serve for parks and recreation, which doesn't apply as much? In the urban area they're talking about, would it help you in parking ramps or parking? I mean, could you use this and load money on it? Everything you ask it to do changes the cost of it. But we think what it would be is a county-issued ID with a partnership of the cities, and that it could be accepted by each individual city in different ways. So here it could be a library, but Iowa City it could be used for a rec center. It depends on what the card is asked to do, the cost of it. But law enforcement is actually very much behind this, because a lot of times people without ID who are victims of crime or witnesses of crime won't report it or won't talk to the police, because not having an ID makes you a target. And so law enforcement, I think, was behind this quicker than anybody. And so that's kind of where we are. The board has tasked the county attorney to come up with a plan and bring it back to us. We will probably be adopting a resolution in support as soon as the language is worked out soon. Implementation, if it's going to be simple, could be implemented next year. If it's complicated, that's a problem. Some cities use it like a credit card, and that system is unbelievably expensive.
So is it safe to say that most of the operational burden then of this would be borne by the county as the issuer?
Most likely it would be borne by the county in the urban cities that have their own law enforcement.
Okay.
Iowa City is prepared to put money in it. Corleville and North Liberty are probably willing to do that. I mean, they're not as firm. If it's the smaller system, it's not going to cost that much money. But we believe we would be the issuers. However, it could be remote where it could move to Iowa City. But you want the integrity of the system, because you still want to verify that John is who he says he is. You just may use other documents to prove who John is and witnesses and whatnot. So you do not want these things fraudulently duplicated, or someone who's not trained issuing them. So if it moved around the county, it would be very cautiously, but Iowa City Library, for example, would be very happy to be an issuer. So those details will be coming, and we'd be glad to keep you informed. And for you to look if there's anything you would be willing to use an ID for in the libraries or anything else you use IDs for.
Does anyone have any questions about the whole project? I know it's been talked about a lot. It's gaining a lot of traction.
I think they have something like 800 Johnson County residents who have signed up that have pledged that they would get an ID. Many people have signed up that have IDs already, but because there are some people who may be targets by being on this list, then you get a lot of people to sign up, so there are no targets.
Well, it lends credibility and integrity to the system when you've got 1,000 people that are willing to say, I believe in this. And just as a personal aside, I've had a couple of interactions with the Center for Worker Justice. That is also an organization that's worthy of respect for the work that they're doing.
And if any time you want a presentation, I know you're busy with other things, just holler. CWJ or Janet could come and do it.
Okay. Thank you. And other projects and issues of mutual interest.
My mutual interest is, why is everybody here? What's going on?
Stick around and find out.
You all came for us? That's so nice.
Grab an agenda.
I didn't see anything that said fireworks on here.
Be nice to us. Really nice to us.
Does the council have any other questions, any other issues they'd like to bring up, things that they've been wishing they could ask?
It's nice to put faces to names. Yeah. Nice to meet you all.
Shall we?
I think just one comment as we move forward with some of our large projects, we will certainly look to you for some expertise, especially in seeking some grant assistance. And, you know, you're going to have a whole lot more knowledge in that area than any of us here.
Yeah, we're free with letters now. You might want to talk to Terrence about money.
Yeah. Very good letters. No, we have had actually some of the smaller communities. City of Oxford just received a grant for a Main Street improvement. We've seen the same in Lone Tree. The county did assist in those. Yeah.
And, you know, I just can't stress enough, use your membership in ACI COG and your membership in the MPO of Johnson County. But, you know, they are there for you. You pay dues for a reason. If you just don't ever use them, you're wasting your money. We do have a grant specialist and communications specialist, and if she can, you know, be of assistance or give you some ideas, if we can write letters of support, I mean, I think we're happy to help you in any way we can. But ECI COG and the MPO are huge resources that you don't want to miss out on.
Well, and when I went to ECOG in person the first time, I think in March or April, and the response I got was, oh, Swisher. I'm not sure we've ever had anyone from Swisher come in or call in. So, you know, it's nice that they now know that we still exist. But, I mean, I will admit that I'm not as familiar as I should be with all of the programs that they do manage, and I think that is a great resource.
And the MPO just went through a leadership change because people moved around in Iowa City government. But they're your transportation planner also. And so make sure you use them if you need a traffic study or stop sign study. I mean.
And we have just gotten a traffic study. So shall we open things up to all of our guests? That sounds good to you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Does anyone know? Oh, Gene, all right. Can you introduce yourself?
You knew there was a reason. Okay.
Last time I appeared for you people, Terrence,
yes?
You challenged me.
I did.
To have the cities look into their design standards.
Right.
I've checked with almost every city in the county. They all have design standards superior to what the county has. In fact, Swisher right now is going through a study of their design standards. We completed it. are making recommendations to the city council, and they will be far superior to what this county does.
Great.
How can we get planning and zoning to get off the bus and start doing something about it? I have not had any contact, and it's been 8 months.
Well,
and that was supposed
I'll,
to be
I'll take the question. The county did respond because you came. I mean, the county did set up a system working with the developer, working with our planning and zoning department. Because of your leadership, we are able to put in additional cul-de-sac. We are able to require a storage tank with water. I mean, these are things that were...
We were supposed to get it so we didn't have to do that anymore. We were supposed to start a study committee and get together and agree on new design standards that more adequately conform to the fire standards and that kind of thing. And I haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't either.
And I'm the point person.
Okay.
So.
Note well taken. So we'll see where the county goes with that. The question is do we create a law or do we create discretion? And right now we have discretion. And we worked with that discretion because it was addressed. The question is, will the Board of Supervisors want to create a law, an ordinance, that requires those kinds of things? And it could very well have huge impacts on lots of different developments around the community and impacts on the environment, too.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. But I think, from our point of view, representing the Utility Association, that we need to come up with something that is more defined than what we have.
Okay. Seems like a reasonable conversation.
I'm always trying to be reasonable.
Yes, you have.
More than that. Were we taking a vote on that? Or?
Hey, who's Rick's liaison? We got to get some work done.
Well,
Rob and I are.
Okay, so.
Drive to Iowa City again to appear before you.
Yeah, we'll come
we
up.
We thought you liked coming to see us.
Yeah, this is a real fine experience.
I don't know, Janelle. It's the only thing he ever talks about. How much he enjoyed the.
He keeps talking about the safety thing all the time. I know.
It's your. Thank you,
Gene. Thanks, Gene.
Is there anything else? Any other questions, comments, observations? This is a great opportunity to have all five of them lined up right here.
Mm-hmm. Is that, I know this hasn't done anything to do with Swisher, but that project's out this year, you know, still online to go?
Yes, it'll be done next year. It's a grind and overlay. The only question we have is, a section of it is half Shoeyville, half Swisher, County, and whether or not we're going to go ahead because they're not interested in cost sharing. And we haven't made that final determination, but we were there last month. The grind overlay that we did in Upper Old Highway 6, we're very pleased with. It was a much more affordable way to do this, and that's what we have designed for there.
So you're now talking about starting at 120th and going all the way south?
No, from
still
city limits.
Start at Sandy Beach Road. And going south.
No, city limits is farther north. But
yeah.
Greg, do you want to tell them?
300 and some feet north.
It's several hundred feet north of the intersection of Sandy Beach and Curtis Bridge Road. That is where we will begin construction and will continue south of the day.
So the county portion of it.
Yeah. And there's just a couple hundred feet there where they have one side of the road and we have the other. So it's either going to be 1,600 feet done or 1,400 feet done. So it won't make a huge difference.
And I would just say that I can't tax people in Lone Tree to build a road in the city of Shoeyville. And so if people want that finished in Shoeyville, they need to get to their council and see that that's a priority of theirs. And to this point, they're not interested.
Well, there's a big, giant development right at it in the city of Shoeyville.
Well, there's a lot of county traffic, too, that comes from the south. Yeah. Not Shoeyville.
Right.
An awful lot.
Right. But our rural rural residents pay for that rural road system. That's where that funding comes from.
Are there any other comments, questions? How do you want to close this up?
I just walk out. And if Gene keeps asking me questions, I'm really thank you so much. We'll go ahead and adjourn our meeting. We appreciate the opportunity. This is great. We hope to do this often. At least once a year. Sound good? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody for coming to see us.
Oh, that was you. Normally me driving it. Yeah.